Sup, freaks. This rip of RHR was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They produce the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet. It's got two secure enclaves. It's got a full screen, full keyboard here. As you can see, if you're watching, if you can't watch, just imagine something that looks like a BlackBerry. It allows you to create private public key pairs offline in an AirGAT fashion. You never have to connect the Cold Card Q to an internet device. You can sign transactions and PSBTs remotely in the most secure fashion. If you're a Bitcoin Power user and you're looking for the best security, go pick up a Cold Card Q and go to coinkite.com. Find the Cold Card Q there. I think you can go to coldcard.com as well. Use the code RHR for 5% off. Step up your security. Get a Cold Card Q.
Our good friends, Parker Lewis and Dhruv Bansal, are two of the deepest thinkers in Bitcoin. While they come from very different backgrounds, they've landed on the exact same conclusion. It's Bitcoin that matters, not crypto. This masterclass lays out why 21 million is the key breakthrough, how Bitcoin, not blockchain, creates decentralization, and why everything else will be built on Bitcoin. Understand why Bitcoin works and why nothing else does. Watch the premiere at unchained.com/RHR. That's unchained.com/RHR.
This rip was brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. If you have friends, family members who are newbies, they still have their Bitcoin in the exchange, help them take the first step off the exchange. BitKey makes it very easy. It's a hardware device that has a multi-sig. You have the hardware device has a key, your mobile phone app has a key, and Block has a key in the cloud. They've designed this with trade-offs to make it very hard to lose Bitcoin. Easy to use, hard to lose. Go to bitkey.world. Use the code RHR or RHR20 at checkout to get a discount. Not sure exactly which one it is yet. Try both. Go check it out. BitKey.world. Try RHR or RHR20. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC-free for completing the bounties if you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats. Go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
I don't know whether to start, like, should I stand up and start flossing? What is the correct thing to do in front of Zoomers?
Matt. I don't know. I play a lot of Fortnite. So what's the most popular dance on Fortnite right now?
Do you really play a lot of Fortnite?
I do play. I play with my brother sometimes because he's on it chronically. Like, he's younger than me, so he's on the younger side of Gen Z, and I'll play with him kind of often, just whenever I have some time at night. But yeah,
Marty's anti porn and video games.
I'm not anti video games. I just don't have time.
The porn makes sense. That makes sense.
Thank video you, games. Sensei.
Sometimes.
I actually love Fortnite. I don't really play it that much anymore, but my dream has always been Fortnite, but with sats in it. And I kind of.
That's what I've been saying. I've been telling my brother this because he actually knows one of the guys who makes the maps. And I was telling them they need to replace the gold bars in their vending machines with sats.
I mean, they're never going to do it because they make so much money on the V-Bucks. Like, it has to be a challenger. I kind of single-handedly fucked over the Satoshi Games team because I convinced them to launch Light Night, and it was a massive development sinkhole, and then they pivoted to Solana afterwards. So
that's unfortunate.
Keep my mouth shut on games and sats for a little bit.
Yeah. So as you freaks may be able to tell, we have a Zoomer with us this week. Since he answered the call, Matt sent out a note on Noster after last week's episode where we were going over the demographics of this channel, which
Marty, I think you were wrong. I think the Zoomers just don't watch our YouTube feed.
No, you can go back into the podcast feed too, Logan. You can pull it up.
We're watching. Maybe the Zoomers just have better privacy.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. We just have better privacy practices.
Is that true? The generation that's going around with, like, recording their whole lives on live streams and man on the street interviews.
I just want to be clear, Marty. We have Cincy here, Ride or Die Freak, Zoomer, who answered the call. But we have another 2 weeks of our Zoomer series. I have Zoomer scheduled for next week and the week after that as well. I got overwhelmed with requests to jump awesome. On the show. Cincy was just first. So
yeah.
And he's Noster only.
That is true. I nuked all of my socials, including my LinkedIn, which was a bold move for working at a TradFi institution. So, but it had to be done.
Look, he's even got a job.
Man of principle. He's got a job.
Allegedly.
Nuking his LinkedIn. I think building on last week's conversation, which is the part of the conversation about the demographics and our Zoomers, what is their perspective on Bitcoin? We have a resident Zoomer here in Logan, but now we have some more anecdotal data points that could be provided by Cincy. How is your generation viewing Bitcoin, if at all?
It's interesting because I feel like you have to have some context with how we were brought up, because I'm on the older side of Gen Z. I'm pretty sure I'm on the older side of Gen Z, but our earliest childhood memory is pretty much 9/11. Like, I remember that my mom, we lived in Maryland at the time. My dad worked in DC, and that's kind of my earliest childhood memory. And then when we were kids going to elementary school, Columbine happened, and you started seeing school shootings on TV. And it's like you see your peers getting shot on TV at what's supposed to be a safe place. And then 2008 happens, your parents get laid off, they lose their jobs, you go through economic hardship. And then we go to college and it's COVID and the world completely changes. And it's like at each of these points in time during our very formative years, it's like the government is infringing more on your privacy and your freedom. And a lot of people in my generation, there's a lot of nihilism, honestly, about life in general, but also about your own personal finances. And I feel like the energy is in the right place. Like, there's just a natural distrust of government in my generation that doesn't really exist in the older generations. Like, I feel like the default view of the boomers is like whatever the government says is scripture. And it's like the complete opposite in my generation. Like, whatever the government says is obviously a lie to us. So I feel like the energy is right, but I still run into too many people that just haven't done the research on Bitcoin. They don't really understand what it is. And they kind of see it as some speculative asset versus a tool for freedom. So I think we need to get the message out there to more people in my generation, because the energy is directed in the right place. But I still don't think enough people understand it and know what it really could provide to them. That's my take, at least.
Yeah. And you said the energy is in the right place in the sense that Zoomers are naturally skeptical of the government, and similar to millennials like Matt and I think maybe not our earliest memories, but core memories, 9/11, school shootings, financial crises after financial crises, 2008,
yeah.
COVID, obviously in our later years, but that's like that nihilism that you described too. Like, it manifests in different ways, and I've been writing a lot about this in the bent, this like high velocity trash economy, and nihilism has led to what I'm perceiving externally as millennial looking into the Zoomer lifestyle is this, there's this perceived angst and perspective of there's no way I can get ahead, so I might as well just live a high speed lifestyle, for lack of a better term, while I can. And so I wrote about it earlier this week. Coachella is happening last weekend, this weekend, and they launched buy now, pay later abilities for Coachella in 2009. At that point, it was 18% of concert goers were doing buy now, pay later. Now, today, fast forward 16 years, it's 60%. And sort of like I view that as Zoomers are saying, screw it. Like, I'm just going to buy now, pay later, get to Coachella, which is a form of escapism. And if you look at the demo of people going to these concerts, it's generally Zoomers and younger millennials. And that makes me sad that there is this nihilism that
seems to exist. But there's also, we were talking about it before we hit record, there is also like a subset of Zoomers that I've observed that do recognize these problems and are sort of actively fading mainstream culture, if you will. There are a lot of them, a lot of right-wing Zoomers, a lot of anti-Zoomers. NoFap November became a thing driven by Zoomers. This return to somewhat conservative lifestyle or recognition that we need to fade the degeneracy that exists and become more conservative. But there does seem to be like a split between nihilism and those who are actively trying to improve their lives, whether it's becoming health nuts, no fapping. And it does feel like Bitcoin is a missing piece for a larger subset of Zoomers.
Definitely.
Is there a question in there?
No, it's just we're going to riff. We're going to bounce back and forth here.
Cincy, have you ever put a burrito on a payment plan?
I've never put a burrito on a payment plan. I think I fall in the subset of Zoomers where I'm maniacally trying to become as profitable as I can, lowering expenses and stacking as many sats as I can. We need to get more of the people in my generation on that wave, because there is a lot of nihilism, and there's also just an understanding that society has been deteriorating since we were born, pretty much. Like, it's like for all the generations before us, or maybe not for the millennials, I'm not sure, you guys would be able to speak to that more, but it's always been the next 10 years will be better than the last 10 years. But I feel like for our generation, we've seen kind of like a deterioration, like what you were saying, in society. And
it was the same for us.
Well, I think like, what's unique about us,
discovered Bitcoin.
Yeah. I think what's unique about us though, is like we, especially in our 90s babies, early 90s babies, like we have like our earliest core memories are not 9/11. They're like the world right before the internet. And so we have like this tethering to the analog world that existed before the internet became widespread. And we've seen,
yeah, we grew up before Facebook existed.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone was on Facebook and Snapchat and Twitter when I was going to school. Yeah, it was just part of life at that point for us. Like, it was something that always existed.
Wait, so everyone always asks too many times, it's like the Bitcoin podcast trope, like, how did you discover Bitcoin? How did you discover Rabbit Hole Recap?
That's actually a funny story. So I won't go into my whole Bitcoin story, but I went to school for personal finance, went down the investing rabbit hole, was super on like the Preston Pish wave, honestly, of like that whole investing style that he describes as being like a mix of Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett investing in quality companies. And then discovering Bitcoin because he realized that financial markets are not actually free markets, and that we don't really live in a free market, or what really is cap. Like, people think we live in a capitalist society, but it's not real capitalism. It's some weird mix of socialism and capitalism. And so that's how I got into Bitcoin. I listened to a lot of Peter's show, What Bitcoin Did, in the beginning. That kind of got me going down the rabbit hole. And then I listened to a bunch of other shows I loved. After I listened to a little bit of Citadel Dispatch and TFTC, and then after Peter left, I had to branch out and find new podcasts. So I found Bitcoin Audible and Rabbit Hole Recap, and went even farther down the rabbit hole. It's kind of like switching from Ledger to a cold card. It's like you have to go deeper down the Bitcoin podcast rabbit hole.
You know? I like that.
What a compliment.
Yeah, no shade to anybody else. I still listen to What Bitcoin Did. I love Danny.
Gotta get your cold card. Let's get the show in. I got a new cold card here.
No, Danny's great. I'm actually, we have a hard stop today because I'm recording What Bitcoin Did right after this.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Do you, going back to Zoomers and Bitcoin specifically, you mentioned they view it as a speculative asset. Is there a sense, also a sense that I missed the boat with Bitcoin? It's trading at
definitely. And I think 80. That's why you have so much shit coining in my generation. It's like every crypto bro that's around my age also holds like Ethereum and Solana and is talking about, like, I don't even know, whatever coin is getting rugged later this afternoon. And I think there's like a gap because people don't understand what money is. They just know, they innately know that their dollar is deteriorating and they need to find an asset that's going to go up. And so they try to go to an asset that they think is going to go up a lot versus the asset that already looks like it's gone up a lot, like Bitcoin. But they need to understand money and what's really broken in our system, because Bitcoin is the only crypto. Like, in my opinion, we should take back the crypto term, and Bitcoin should be the only crypto, because all these other things are just garbage.
Yeah, and there's a, when it comes to like crypto, meme coin, degen trading, there's a persona that's put out there by like the Vape Capital guys and others pumping meme coins that this is how you make it out. Andrew Tate, whoever it may be.
Is Vape Capital?
It's like all those, what is it? FaZe Banks is his name. There's like,
is it actually the name? Does he have a firm named Vape Capital?
No, I think it's like, they've been anointed,
because what, they like vape on stream or something?
Yeah. They vape a lot. It's like, okay, the convergence of like TikTok House and crypto traders. And point being, question, in your experience, like, do you know many Zoomers who have sort of escaped poverty via meme coining or degen shitcoin trading?
I don't actually. I know I have a couple friends who hold Bitcoin, but I actually don't have any friends who are Bitcoin maxis. Like, that, none of them hold Bitcoin and nothing else. All of them have Bitcoin and also Solana or also Ethereum. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who works at the same company as me, who holds shitcoins, and was basically giving me the talk that you need to diversify and that you can't have all your eggs in one basket. But to me, it's like, that conversation is so frustrating, because it's like, if you understood what Bitcoin is, it'd be like telling someone who owns gold to diversify into iron or something. It's like, these are not the same assets. They're not doing the same thing for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's one thing I think, going back to this overarching theme of nihilism that exists in the younger generations, it certainly exists in millennials as well, particularly those who are in their mid-30s and don't have a lot of savings and the prospect of a better future, financially at least, is that's one thing that's always pissed me off personally, and we've talked about it quite a bit throughout the 7 years of this show, is that the crypto people are really good at selling a dream. Like, this is how you get rich quick. This is the only way you're going to be able to do it. And I think it's important to highlight to people that it happens for a very, very small minority of people engaging in those activities.
It starts with just getting a hold of your personal finances. I feel like so many people are just so far down the debt hole by the time they graduate college that they're just feeling desperate or hopeless. But you have to get control of your personal finances first. You have to pay off your debt. You have to spend less than you make. And once you have that down, then you can start learning about money and investing in Bitcoin. But so many people are just financially illiterate, which is not always completely their fault, but that's a huge problem that I see, is people are just taking on more debt to go live the lifestyle they want versus getting it together and becoming profitable, because you can't achieve any of these things until you do that first.
No. And it's a hard message to sell and to internalize and to actually put into action, because it's hard to become profitable, especially when you're laden with student loan debt right out of the gate. And it is a tough situation. I have a lot of empathy for Zoomers, anybody coming up now, millennials that are struggling, boomers, Gen Xers as well. But I think that's one thing that's clear to me, particularly as a millennial with young children now. I look at them and they're learning about Bitcoin, and it's like, when I think about broader Bitcoin adoption and time scale, that's a question I ask myself. Is it even worth focusing on Zoomer adoption, or do we need to like run straight to Gen Alpha and just literally build them up from the ground up?
What? You're going to say that in front of them?
Yeah.
I I mean, Cincy, I would say like stack as hard as fucking possible right now, because once you have a family, the expenses really start to pile up. It's much easier to live a very lean lifestyle as a single young man. But Marty, I mean, a lot of what he's saying is exactly what I felt when we were coming up. Like, I mean, we were probably similar age as him, without doxing his age, when we were first looking at Bitcoin. And I was like completely disenfranchised. I was like, burn everything down. We were so fucked. And well, I found Bitcoin. Yeah. Bitcoin was hope. It was like something I could actually put my time and energy into and tangibly improve my life and the future life of my future children.
I think we should go as hard as we possibly can at the Zoomers, because we understand that something is broken and something needs to change. I'm convinced that the next generation of transformative leaders will come from my generation, because we understand that something is wrong and we understand that it needs to change. We just need to show the people in my generation, this is what's wrong. The money is broken, and we fixed it. Actually, it's fixed already. You just have to adopt it yourself and use it.
Yeah. And to that point, what do you think is the best marketing tactic, narrative, sort of positioning of Bitcoin for Gen Z specifically?
That's a good question. I feel like we need to make it user friendly. I like a lot of people come to Bitcoin and for example, on Lightning, I remember a few, because I'm not like some Bitcoin developer or someone who's been involved in the space since 2010. Like, people in my generation, if they download a Lightning wallet and it doesn't work, they're going to delete it and never come back. That's why I think things like Primal and Nostr are super useful, because you can get someone in the door with Nostr and Primal, and then they start making Bitcoin transactions and go down the rabbit hole that way. So I think presenting tools to people that have Bitcoin kind of intertwined in there, that are kind of like this other use case. Like, I think people in my generation would be super interested in Nostr if they knew what it was. You get them in the door that way, they start using Bitcoin and they go down the rabbit hole. So we need to integrate Bitcoin into more things that are super user friendly and actually adding convenience to people's lives, not only for my generation, but just for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, and to that point too, curious, because I came up, my social media, Facebook, I deleted my Facebook in like 2016. X, Twitter has been my go-to social media platform. But from what I understand, I'm a boomer in a millennial's body. X, probably not the best platform for Gen Z. They're in the Snapchat, Instagram, Discord, Twitch. So when I think about like implementing Bitcoin into tools that are user friendly and are actually being used by Gen Z, Zap.stream actually makes a lot of sense as like a low hanging fruit. Like, the live streaming seems to be a massive market within Gen Z.
Definitely. And what we were talking about earlier with Fortnite, I think if you can integrate Bitcoin into the gaming industry, that'll completely change the game, because you can have this same, instead of these gaming companies having their own currencies, you just have Bitcoin integrated through all of them. And then you can earn rewards in one game, hop over to the other one and spend it. Like Fortnite has V-Bucks, but they also have vending machines placed throughout all of the maps that take these fake gold bars. Like, why are they not using sats for that? They can make money off of it. The people can make money off of it, feel like they're more involved in the game. Like, it just makes too much sense to me. And you need to integrate that across all gaming companies. And if there was a currency that could go between all of these different games and platforms, people would use it and it would be super useful. And it already exists.
Yeah. We've been saying this. Remember when we used to do advertisements? What was that game that Donner Labs put out where you could like use the Lightning Network?
That was awesome. Way ahead of its time. Yeah. You could buy billboards. It was like permissionless advertising. And then if you paid for the billboards with sats, if you won in the game, you got a portion of the sats. So like there was like a circular economy that was built up by it. I don't remember what it was called. It was a shooter.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, but it's like that's an example of something that was probably like just too early. But makes sense. Yeah,
I false started on Sats and games. We false started on Sats and games for so long. I mean, I think the way to do it is what like ZBD is doing, where you provide like the APIs and the infrastructure B2B, and then you let other game developers actually just turnkey integrate it. But then the other piece is it's going to have to be challengers. Like we've seen all throughout Bitcoin history, from an individual basis, from a company basis, from a government basis, it's always the number two, the number three, the number five of their particular niche that actually does it, because they need to innovate to gain for competitive sake. Like the person who's in first place or the company that's in first place won't do it. Apple didn't adopt Bitcoin. Some random no-name tech company called MicroStrategy did, and now everyone knows who MicroStrategy is. The U.S. government didn't adopt Bitcoin first. It was El Salvador, right? It was a country that had absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain. And so it's not going to be Epic Games with Fortnite. It'll be whoever comes next. And people forget, like, Fortnite itself was a challenger game. We never had premium games that were free up until Fortnite proved out the model.
And they still are a challenger to Apple. They've had some legal battles with Apple monetizing the game, where the Apple's taking that Apple tax. And I don't know all the intricacies of what it would look like if they integrated Bitcoin and Lightning for their vending machines. But I assume that it would help a little bit with that problem that they have with Apple. So I don't know anyone at Fortnite, but anyone who does, we got to get them on this.
Yeah. I think Epic earlier this year or last year made some progress. I think they actually got like a court ruling that was in their favor in this battle with Apple. Yeah, I think gaming makes a lot of sense. It's just like a timing thing. Like, in it's a two-sided market problem as well. Do the Gen Z users of these games need Bitcoin first, or does the game have to figure out a way to get Bitcoin into their hands so that they kickstart that circular economy within their ecosystem?
Yeah, that's a good point. They could do something where if you had V-Bucks, you could redeem a certain amount. Like, there could be some kind of exchange rate to where you could do V-Bucks for Sats or something to just initially give you something.
Yeah. It's funny. That's how Vitalik got into Bitcoin. I believe he was selling his World of Warcraft gold for Bitcoin to create like a market using World of Warcraft gold. All right, let's get to the list. I'm going to catapult my topic to the top of the list, which is, I think, a good topic to start with the Zoomer on the air, the concept of meme coins. Base, which is the second layer protocol that Coinbase has built on top of Ethereum, and they're really pushing hard. Did you just kick them?
Hold on. I got
to... I'm still here.
Logan,
I'm fulfilling Odell's request right now.
I asked him.
All right, there we go.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll be back in a second.
Okay. Base yesterday marketed a meme coin to their followers. Of course, people went and bought it, and within a few hours, it was completely rugged. And I thought this was just poetic coming from Coinbase. That they would just like overtly rug users. They've been riding the grift of other people's rugs for many years now, but now they've gotten in the game of doing it themselves. And I want to be clear, I'm not sure if the Base team had like a pre-allocation and they were the ones who actually dumped, but they created the conditions for a classic meme coin pump and dump. And you can see the chart here. Base is for everyone. They're really pushing the memes. Base is for everyone. They're trying to make it approachable, which is admirable, but I think these people are completely misguided and utterly confused about what's happening here. And Logan, pull up the screenshot that I shared before the tweet. This is Jesse Pollock, who I believe is the head of Base in that initiative of this protocol. And he's been pushing this meme that we need a meme coin, all the things. We need a coin for everything. Content creators need to monetize by creating meme coins. And he tried to make a distinction here between what's the thing say on the left, Logan?
Which thing?
Content coin.
Content coin. Yeah, content coin's not good enough. You need to get your content coin out there first, but it eventually needs to become a meme coin.
What the fuck is a content coin? This is the first I've ever heard of that.
These people are very confused. They're
not even good at memes.
No. And they're trying to force something that is economically illiterate onto the market. And I think if you're using Coinbase, still using Coinbase, many people listening to this podcast probably aren't, but if any of you are, I think it's advantageous to make the decision to pull the ripcord and open an account with a Bitcoin only company, because these people are confused. They're spreading their resources thin and they're launching their own meme coins now.
I thought this was fake at first. I saw this last night and I thought that it was someone imitating Coinbase. I didn't think that it was actually Coinbase. And then when I found out it was Coinbase, I was like, what was the goal here? What were we trying to do? I actually don't know a lot about the basis for everyone coin. Do you guys know
goal was? They have a chain, right? Basis is a Coinbase
L2.
Ethereum layer 2, right?
Yeah.
That also has a token, right? Because all the Ethereum layer 2s also have a token. Did I see that they announced this from their main account or?
From the base main account, yes.
And they said an intern took it over. It wasn't intentional or something.
I'm sure they said that.
Did they say something to that effect? I wonder how much... I wonder how much of it is that all these ETH people are just getting absolutely wrecked right now. The ETH BTC chart is just carnage.
It's incredible.
Did you see that? So they're grasping at straws. They're just we're watching them go through their cope grief phase. Did you see the clip of what's his face? CK's old host.
David
Hoffman. Did you see that clip?
Yes.
Do you have it handy?
I'll find it. Give me a couple seconds.
It was basically we're already down 99%. We can't go down further. It's you got another 99%, bro.
Here it is, Logan.
But yeah, it's pretty fucked up. I mean, this is one of the reasons why 1031 exists. And this is one of the reasons why the blossoming industry of Bitcoin only startups exists, because the incumbents are just straight predatory. They just take advantage of people and it's fucked up. Okay, play the clip.
Well, there's clearly something idiosyncratically weak about ETHBTC. Yeah. Right? I mean, you've been talking about
it. But it's also already been expressed, as in it has been weak. It can't be that much more weak for that much longer.
It absolutely can.
Okay.
it can. Well, there's clearly something.
And this is a perfect example, because this dude...
And the nervous laughter afterwards is so good.
No, it's you've hitched your wagon to an anchor that is quickly falling to the bottom of the sea. And, I mean, this pull out, the guy that was talking to David Hoffman, I believe his name's Haseeb. He runs Dragonfly Ventures. But, a perfect example of, I think he's a big Solana bull. And these people are still so confused. I didn't watch that whole episode, but I imagine his extrapolation of ETH probably having a lot more to fall was, it's time to jump ship to Solana. It's obvious Solana's outcompeted. These people do not recognize that they are engaged in a battle, a monetary competition, not a tech competition. And Bitcoin is the superior monetary asset. And so the confusion that exists out there is widespread and rampant. And again, going back to what I said earlier, it's just very frustrating. And I don't want to thrust malintent on these people. I do genuinely believe that some of them earnestly believe that what they're working on is potentially world changing and could benefit people financially in the long run. But again, they have an utter misunderstanding of what's happening here. And that's one of the things that is pretty unfortunate for people outside looking in, listening to these people shill these dreams and these pipe dreams, is that they don't know better either. And they're falling hook, line, and sinker for, all right, Ethereum's dead, but Solana's the next one. Or what's the other one? Celestia was one that they were pumping 6 months ago, which is also dead.
Wait, what the fuck is that?
Exactly. I've never heard of that one.
Oh, dude, I was in Abu Dhabi and Novo and Scaramucci. They were pumping it. I'm very excited about Celestia and what they're doing for.
Did Novo get a tattoo of this one as well? Or
I don't know. Looks like Galaxy's dumping their ETH bags, though.
Galaxy hired Zach Prince as a managing director. Did you see?
I did.
This might be before your time, Cincy. Do you know what BlockFi is?
I do know what BlockFi is, actually. Yeah. The crazy thing about BlockFi is I actually, very early on in my Bitcoin journey, I had Bitcoin on BlockFi. And literally, I can't remember how close the timing of this was, but like a few months before they went under, I finally got a hardware wallet and transferred everything to a hardware wallet. And thankfully, didn't lose my Bitcoin, but I was very close to it.
Nice. Well, anyway, one of the co-founder of BlockFi is now managing director at Galaxy, which is just fucking straight clown world.
No comment.
Yeah. It's like the guy that went from like the people that you see, they go from like Lehman to Bear Stearns or whatever. And in their LinkedIn profiles, he's just that guy. He's the crypto version of that guy.
They have like Enron on the top of their resume.
Yeah. But to tie up this particular section in this topic, if you're a Zoomer out there, this is your opportunity. Don't get distracted by all the shiny things. And there are going to be a lot of people out there, crypto VCs specifically, who talk flashy. They sound smart. They're throwing out buzzwords. Content coins, meme coins. That's the other thing. The buzzwords are just getting worse cycle by cycle. And they're going to try and hook you in. But if you're a Zoomer out there listening to this, since he brought a big crowd of Zoomers to the live stream, stay humble, stack sats, focus on Bitcoin in the long run. And that's going to benefit you way more than trying to speculate on meme coins and thinking that Bitcoin is MySpace and Solana is going to take over the world.
What's never made sense to me about that is even if the network has any utility, and that's a big if it has utility, what makes the actual coin something that is investable? Like what makes the Ethereum token or the Solana token, like what makes that investable? Nothing, in my opinion, but some people apparently think that there's some value there.
Well, real world assets are going to be put on these blockchains, and the activity generated by these real world assets are going to create fees for the base token, which should increase its value. That's one of the arguments that's put out there. But I think it's becoming clearer by the day as it gets more insane as Coinbase launches meme coins. And that's the other thing. Brian Armstrong came out a few weeks ago and was like, people are asking us to list thousands of coins. Like we literally can't keep up with it. And I just want everybody to know we're not going to list everyone, but we will launch our own. It's very confused out there. Very confused.
We got Mav21 in the Nostr live chat with 21,000 sats. He says, yo, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mav.
Let's run down this list. We got like an hour and 10.
Yeah, I forgot you have a hard stop. ESP32 microcontroller vulnerabilities. This was a CVE vulnerability disclosure, CVE 2025-27840. ESP32 is a microcontroller that is widely used in IoT devices to provide Wi-Fi and Bluetooth connectivity. Attackers can use various forms to gain access to the private key data of Bitcoin wallets through ESP32. Saw some chatter about this on X yesterday, and it seems like any Bluetooth-enabled Bitcoin wallet may be susceptible to this. Which wallets?
I don't know. It seems pretty bad. The Jade wallet uses ESP32. I think some people from the Jade side said they're not vulnerable to this. I have not verified that. But they do, in fact, use the ESP32 platform. And then the other big one for Bitcoiners is the BitAx project. Also uses an ESP32 microcontroller. So if you use either of those, you should dive deep on this.
With BitAx, I guess it's, I guess I'd frame it as like less existential.
Not really. So
they can only jack your hash, right? They can't like steal your Bitcoin.
I mean, no, they can potentially get into your home network and then do other things. Imagine like evil villain. Oh, what's the best way to get into every Bitcoiner's home network? I love the BitAx project. I'm not trying to FUD, but I think the stakes are a little bit higher than people might let on in terms of a bunch of Bitcoiners around the world just plugging it into their router.
Lovely. So this bug allows bad private keys to be used, which can lead to serious problems, including loss of money. To fix this, you need to add a check to ensure that the private key is greater than zero. Imagine someone is trying to hack the Bitcoin network. They find a weak point in the verification of private keys used to access the cryptocurrency. The problem is that code only checks if the private key is too big. If the key is very big, it is rejected, but the code forgets to check if it is too small. So not great. Not great as I look at my BitAx plugged in here to the Bitcoin Park Austin Wi-Fi network.
You should assume that the Bitcoin Park Wi-Fi, like Bitcoin Community Hub networks are not like, those are soft targets. You should probably not operate under the assumption that those are secure networks. I mean, this is why cold storage exists, right? It's like you can compromise everything, but if your private keys to your savings are offline, then at least those won't get owned. Like that's the whole premise of cold storage as a concept. Is that if your private keys are never online, then you are protected from network attacks.
Am I wrong in assuming it seems like it's a pretty trivial fix by just making sure that you're checking that the private key is above
a certain threshold? I see MM in the YouTube chat saying BlockLock uses ESP32. So I have not verified that, but there you go. That as well.
I'm completely compromised.
Yeah, do I need to unplug my BitAxes? I have a couple running behind me.
You got both right behind you. I don't know. Just be aware. I think, you know, also people have their smart TVs and stuff all hooked up in their networks. Like most home networks are probably incredibly insecure. And then people are using their ISP provided router, which is probably just like backdoored as a service. But these are all things to be aware of. And we do like mentioning vulnerabilities up at the front of the show, which is why I put it there. But I haven't looked into it seriously.
I haven't either. But if anybody in the live stream comments can comment on whether or not this fix is trivial, as I'm assuming it is, that would be helpful. And if there's been a patch.
Well, my basic understanding is it involves malicious firmware. But that malicious firmware could be shipped with a device in the first place.
Yeah.
So be aware.
Be aware. Be aware of this vulnerability out there. Next up on the list, going from technical details to political details, the Trump administration signs a resolution blocking IRS reporting rule for DeFi brokers. And I believe this was something that Biden was pushing that if adopted and pushed widely would have necessitated KYC AML for certain wallets. Is that correct?
This was like the broker dealer rule, remember? And I think it was largely targeted at DEXs, but it in general had to do with the travel rule and collecting KYC and self-custody wallets having to collect KYC. And no matter how you cut it, it was a massive overstep. So it's good to see it pulled back.
Yeah. This is a good win. A big win for good governance. Representative Kerry's resolution ends the Biden administration's DeFi broker rule that never should have been issued in the first place, one that went beyond the scope of the law and would have subjected small businesses and taxpayers to impossible reporting requirements while forcing them to wade through miles of IRS red tape in the process. So good to see. Good to see. I mean, and on this note too, it looks like, I don't know if you have it on the list, but while we're talking about blocking IRS reporting rules. Looks like Coin Center and BPI are teaming up to write an amicus brief as it pertains to Samurai Wallet and Tornado Cash.
Love to see it. Two of my favorite organizations.
Yeah. Next up on the list, Tether backing Ocean Pool with its hash rate. This was announced this week. Tether's going to deploy hash rate on Ocean, advancing decentralized Bitcoin mining infrastructure. Looking for exahash data.
I think this is massive. Tether just has a lot of money, and they've been very focused on increasing their mining operations. And Ocean really needs hash rate. Like, we want to see Ocean's hash rate grow. They're one of the best actors in the Bitcoin mining pool space. So it seems like a natural fit. I think it's pretty cool that Tether specifically is going to be running Datum. So Tether is going to choose the transactions in their own blocks and handling block construction. So I think this is a pretty big deal. And I think we'll see the results in the next 6 to 12 months. But if you look at Ocean's hash rate, because Ocean lists their hash rate publicly, there's already a bump. Doesn't seem like a big enough bump to be all of Tether's hash, but it's up 33%.
Yeah, look, and I would jump back to the six-month view. Going back to November of last year, they were hanging around 2 exahash, bumped up to 4 exahash for a period of time in last week or a couple weeks ago, jumped up to 6. So they've tripled their hash rate in 6 months, which is good to see. What are the Tether? That? Are you a Tether? What are your thoughts on Tether, Cincy?
I think Tether can be really useful for the U.S. government. Again, not a macroeconomics expert, but I'm definitely wary of kind of the private bank digital currency that could emerge itself. And if the U.S. government gets in bed with Tether and starts having economic surveillance through Tether, and they can basically do all the same things that a CBDC would do. So I'm wary of that. Like, I personally have no use for Tether, but I'm an American citizen. So I know there are people out there who do have uses for Tether. I'm definitely wary of the dystopian outcomes of Tether, though, because, it's no different than a CBDC. It's just private.
Yeah. Can be tightly controlled. That'll be actually interesting to see with Tether's warming up to the U.S. government out of necessity due to the fact that they want to survive, particularly with Ocean Pool. If they're constructing their own blocks, like, does that relationship with the U.S. government lead to some sort of a potential transaction censorship?
I mean, I think first of all, they're already doing transaction censorship on Tether.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but and they proudly onboarded. Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think, first of all, the status quo is not great, right? So most U.S. suit miners are already doing OFAC compliance and excluding transactions. It's very basic, and it's like very early days, and maybe that trend is pulling back a little bit under the new administration, but that trend is very clear. I do think that in this situation, this is kind of one of Tether's charitable arms, is like their Bitcoin mining arm, because they do heavily rely on Bitcoin. Both the company and the individuals behind Tether own a lot of Bitcoin and need Bitcoin to remain sovereign, right? It's a tool that they've relied on for years. So my guess is, yeah, I mean, we'll see what transactions they include. But my guess is that they are more doing this so that they can make sure that their transactions never get censored by the suit miners, which is not a zero chance. Right. Imagine Tether trying to move their treasury around and all the large public mining corporations aren't allowing them to move their transactions, or if they, you know, get added to the OFAC list. So this gives them a guarantee that they'll always be able to just, their mining operations give them a guarantee that they'll always be able to include their own transactions into the Bitcoin main chain. What happens? So I would look at it from the opposite perspective, basically.
what happens to the Tether US government relationship if they start mining transactions that aren't OFAC compliant?
That's a great question, Cincy. That's a great
question. But yeah, but my point is like that status quo is already with all the soup miners, right? But yes, that is a good point. And valid, very valid.
I mean, on this topic, B10C has been on top of this subject for quite some time. He was the one to sound the alarm bells last year when it became apparent that Ampool was acting as a central bank of the mining pool industry with multiple other pools proxying into it to get transaction prioritization list and block templates. And so he's been really staying on top of that. And he launched this week, which is this Bitcoin mining centralization index. So go to the mining centralization index, next chart down, Logan. You can see your top six pools as of today control 85% of the network hash rate. So this is something to pay attention to. And as you can see on the chart above, Ocean Pool is not in the top six pools or the top five pools. So it is good to see that they are getting a considerable amount of hash rate from Tether to sort of combat this centralization that exists in the mining pool layer.
Yeah.
Whether or not it leads to Tether's relationship with the government forces them to censor transactions down the line, yet to be determined, but something that definitely pay attention to.
But that's the cool part about Ocean, right? So like Ocean from a transaction construction point of view, a block construction point of view is similar to a solo mining, right? Where if you run Datum, you can choose which transactions are in a block, whoever finds the block. But the problem with solo mining is that you have a variance issue, right? So you might never find a block. It might take you a year to find a block. And that's why pool mining exists. So Ocean combines the two effectively. So you get the benefits of solo mining while you get the benefits of pool mining in terms of lower variance. So you get to pick, if you find a block, you get to pick which transactions are in the block. The pool doesn't. And you also don't have to deal with the variance of having a very low hash rate as a solo miner. So Tether joining, even if Tether censors transactions on Ocean, anyone who doesn't want to censor transactions that's using Ocean is getting the benefit of less variance. They're getting the benefit of more frequent payouts. And when they do find a block, they can include whatever transactions they want to include.
Yeah, it's very good. Very good point.
Like it'd be strictly worse if Tether was mining with Foundry.
Yes.
And I love the Foundry guys or Ampool. Like it's strictly worse.
Yeah. And I think there's some more interesting data in this B10C blog post. If you go down to the hash rate of Ampool and Friends chart, Logan, I believe it is right below this one. Next one. The Ampool and Friends chart.
That's what this one is. Or is it down further? I mean, it's
up,
out of the article.
It's up further. There's the dotted blue line. There it is, right there. Looking at this chart, it's pretty interesting when you consider when B10C started ringing the alarm bell, which is like March, April of last year. And so the share of hash rate that Ampool and the pools proxying into it held at that point or controlled at that point was around like 35 to 38%. And now it's sitting at like 30%. So I think there was a market reaction to people basically noticing this was going on and saying this is not good. And it seems like the aggregate hash rate of Ampool and the pools proxying into it has fallen considerably. At the time, they were the dominant share of hash rate on the network. And since then, Foundry has taken over. I don't know if we can say for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was a market reaction to the research that B10C did, which highlights, like, if you talk about this, like, it's this is why it's important to stay vigilant and highlight this. People do seem to react. Lots of mining pool centralization, Cincy.
The block template construction is centralization is the biggest issue with mining, in my opinion. We need to have more people making block templates. which is Ocean and Datum. That's their whole thing, is people making their own block templates. But I guess I have a question. Is it possible when Ocean finds a block, like say Tether mined a block through Ocean, would you be able to prove that it was Tether who actually found the block without, I guess they could disclose their mining addresses. But if they didn't do that, is there any way to prove that Tether is actually the one finding the block?
I mean, that's a network level, like the mining shares that you're sending to the pool are identifiable with your IP, I believe.
So. Well, no. So the way Ocean works is a little bit different than regular mining pools. First of all, if you're running Datum, you can choose your own. Not all Ocean miners are running Datum, but if you're running Datum, you can do your own block templates. Second piece is if you do find a block and you're doing your own block template, you can publicly take credit for it, right? So you could be like, Cincy found this block. Now, you also don't have to publicly take credit for it. The third piece is payout addresses for Ocean are public because they pay directly from the Coinbase. So when a Bitcoin block is found, a bunch of payouts go out. So you can do some analysis on who's getting paid out and how much they're getting paid out. And then the third piece is, which there's a lot of misunderstanding here, is if you're running Datum, you can, as an Ocean miner, you can broadcast directly to the world, which is not direct. Broadcast directly to the network, which wasn't directly your question, but the concern would be hypothetically that if Ocean didn't approve of your block template, they would block you from actually distributing the block. But they're not required in that situation. They can't actually stop you from finding a block and sending it out.
No, but in terms of being able to identify the individual miner connected to the pool that found the hash that enabled the pool to add a block, I think that is still like a privacy leak, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely an IP. I mean, if you're broadcasting it globally and not to the pool, then your IP address would be attached to it as well.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you broadcast it to the pool, which I think is probably what most do, just because Ocean's probably better connected than individual miners, and you want to get it out as quick as possible, then Ocean would know the IP address.
Yeah.
I need to set up Datum. Not constructing my own blocks right now. Rookie mistake.
Yeah. I mean, what most people don't realize is most of the data you see on like a mempool.space or something is pools self-identifying that they found a block. Like there's nothing stopping Foundry from putting on their blocks in their Coinbase that Ampool found it.
I'm still shocked
that's
just
an honor system.
Yeah, I'm still shocked that that's the way they're doing it. It's just putting a message in the Coinbase that, hey, Foundry mine this pool. It seems like strategically a bad move.
Well, no, because people want to mine with people that have more hash because their variance is low, right? So it's like a bragging point.
Yeah. Do you think if it ever got to a point where governments tried to coerce mining pools to censor transactions, that practice would stop?
Yeah, or people might be more sneaky about it. I mean, look, that's what Ampool has been doing effectively, right? It's like Ampool controls the block templates, but it's the block will say like Brains found the block or F2 pool found the block. And it's really just Ampool. They kind of been doing it.
Yeah. Stay aware, freak. Stay aware. Mining centralization. Mining pool central. That's the other thing, too. I think the ability to exit for individual miners pointing their hash at any pool is still the silver bullet of solving this problem. We've talked about it many times in the past.
Yeah. And the key is that like 15% of pirate miners, you know, it's the intolerant minority is what keeps Bitcoin censorship resistant. Which I think is important. Anyway, B10C, he does really good research. He's one of our best researchers. So everyone should go read it. I don't know if I necessarily agree with him on the total premise of that Bitcoin mining centralization is worse than it's ever been. And I think it's because the numbers kind of lie to you a little bit in that, yes, objectively it is, but Foundry and Ampool never agree on anything. So the fact that we have two pools that are very strong that more or less hate each other and are based in different jurisdictions strictly gives us a better situation than 2017, which was basically just ant pool with nearly 60%, 70% indirectly of the hash rate.
Yeah. And the, and it's like a problem that's hard to solve too, because the economics of running a mining pool are pretty shit. So like,
horrible business
from a competitive landscape perspective, like depending on upstart mining pools to manifest to fight the centralization is almost a losing battle because it's a terrible business to start. I think to that point though, Ocean has proven, and they've shared data, that they launched a new pool, and for the amount of hash rate they have been more profitable than other pools, which is pretty interesting.
But the miners, the individual miners have been more profitable. It's still, they're probably very far away from being profitable at a business layer on the, for the mining pool side.
Yeah.
That's why, like when Foundry bootstrapped, what were they actually making money on? They were making money on loans. They were effectively a loan book that offered a mining pool. And how does Ampool make money? Ampool makes money by being one of the largest ASIC manufacturers. They don't really make money necessarily on that. And then also on top of that, now they're the central bank of Ampool and they're providing loans again, right? We're seeing the same, same but different kind of loan monetization structure in terms of blending out payouts.
Yeah. I'm looking for something interesting, but the development of a BitAxes, even though they may be backdoored via this ESP32.
BitAxes are likely not backdoored. It's beautiful watching the BitAx project grow.
I haven't unplugged mine yet. So, I don't want to FUD BitAx. I love the project and I am a happy user. And on that note of BitAxes too, this was just, let me get cosmic here. So let me get cosmic. Somebody hopped in my mentions yesterday. Logan, pull this up. The manifestation of individual BitAxes finding blocks, whether they're solo mining themselves or lottery mining via CK solo pool, has increased. And I think statistically it is an abnormality. And Just Hoddle hopped in my mentions. He's apparently been doing research and having conversations with ChatGPT about this, but quantum sniping of blocks using BitAxes. And it's an interesting theory.
This is like space isn't real.
No, this is like, right? No, there's actually scientific data to back that this sort of phenomena actually exists in nature. So the thesis is in 2025, small scale BitAx miners are finding blocks at surprisingly high rates, possibly because users are directly observing their exposed chips, causing a quantum wave function collapse that clusters these wins into the present. Unlike big farms where chips are hidden in cases, this streak might balance out over Bitcoin's full history. Compelling evidence, unusual streak, solo mining wins with devices like BitAx are happening more often than expected in 2025, with frequent reports shared across platforms like X. Physical setup differences, BitAx chips are exposed, invisible during operation, allowing direct observation, while big farm chips. No, it's not bullshit. I'll find the study that validates this too. Physics mystery. Quantum mechanics shows observation can collapse wave functions, and since physics lacks a unified theory with relativity, there may be undiscovered effects like observation subtly influencing outcomes in the chip. It's like bullshit. I've been staring at my BitAx chip. Like, you're gonna mine a block. You're gonna mine a block.
Did you mine one yet?
Cincy, hop in here.
I believe it. I know. I'm embarrassed to admit that thought actually has gone through my head before. It's because at the quantum physics level, like, don't atoms behave differently depending on if they're being observed or not? And there's
It's that meme of like the two slits and the monkey looking away and looking at it, and you have the different.
Physicist in my family who despises anybody who tries to use quantum stuff as justification for any kind of bullshit.
We're
physicists.
Theoretical.
Yeah.
We don't like theory here. We like applied physics.
This is not applied physics.
No, there is a study. Logan, look up the study
Can we not waste any time on this? This is just complete bullshit.
I'm going to go stare at my stats.
If you see a large miner change their cases out for transparent cases, short the fuck out of it. Just like, just short the hell out of it.
You can manifest block production for you. Stare at your bid axe, talk to it, look at that Riot's chip and say, this is going to be the Riot's chip that produces the hash.
Riot's going to change all their cases to transparent, and then they're going to hire low income workers to just sit in the warehouse and just stare at their ASICs to get them to mine quicker.
I mean, you're making fun of me and saying it's a whack science, but I won't belabor the point.
Whack science.
I won't belabor the point. There has been many experiments done with plants put in a box of darkness, and there's a light put through a hole that is basically going through four quadrants within the box randomly. It's supposed to have like a random number generator attached with attached to the light, and it's supposed to hit the four quadrants equally throughout time. But they run this experiment with the plant in the box and the plant out of the box. When the plant's not in the box, it hits four quadrants equally over time, over a long enough time period. When the plant is in the box, it hits the quadrant that the plant is in at an abnormally high rate, which would, and the thesis is that the life is trying to manifest its growth. And so collapsing of wave functions to change the reality. It's possible. Won't belabor the point.
The law of attraction.
Yes.
Don't look at porn. Stare at your bid axe, Marty Bent.
That's great advice. You know, what's the downside?
Just the first part.
What's the downside to nofapping and trying to manifest block production?
There's going to be a bunch of marriages ruined over just guys just staring at their bid axes.
Well, you don't have to, you have to do like, what is manifestation? If you think intensely about something, for all you have to do is like 17 to 20 seconds, and it creates this sort of chemical reaction in your body that leads to manifestation.
What about the original premise that bid axes have found more blocks than expected? Is that actually based in math?
I think,
and how would you calculate that?
I think there's been
three
blocks in the last within the last year, which would seem like an abnormality to me.
It's like nothing. It's awesome, but it's really not that much.
Well, when you consider the hash rate to successful block production rate, I think it's above what it should be, probabilistically.
So it'll be below what it should be over the next year, is what I'm hearing. Unless we all stare at our bid axes.
No, go stare at your bid axes. Manifest. There's going to be a bid axe mine today because of this. So we're going to collapse a wave function, and a bid axe is going to find a block today.
It's going to be mine, hopefully.
No, it's going to be mine. I'm staring at it right now. You got this, buddy.
Did you name your bid axe?
No, I didn't. I don't know. The little bid axe that could. That's what we call them in Bitcoin Park, Austin.
We have Weirdo Robot in the Nostra comments saying he watches porn on his BitX screen. It takes a little longer, but it works.
So does that cancel it out, Marty?
That's I don't know how you would do it. There's not enough pixels on that screen. That's something like weird porn you're watching there, Weirdo Robot. JD, Marty stares at his wiener because he thinks it'll make it bigger. The 13-year-old Marty, maybe. Come on, guy. Come on. Moving on. This was pretty big. BitGo and Voltage team up to deliver instant Bitcoin and stablecoin payments. I skipped the original announcement, which is Voltage's new enterprise platform. That enables the fastest way to enable Bitcoin and soon stablecoin transactions. Yeah, I messed it up.
Put the order. Do you realize why?
Why?
Because they launched the enterprise platform and then BitGo's their first partner.
What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, I love the Voltage team. This enterprise product is looks to me like a clear competitor to Lightspark. And love to see competition from good teams on that front. It is not to be confused with Voltage's incredibly respected end user product. This is for a completely different user base. It will have stablecoin support. It will have credit support. So like it's more of a managed product. And so basically it's postpaid instead of, I guess both are postpaid, but like they handle liquidity and stuff for you is my understanding.
Yeah. API product, easy to implement. I think the whole concept, I don't know if people actually have to touch Bitcoin at the end of the day. I think you like implement Voltage and it does like cross-border settlement. It'll take dollars in, move Bitcoin over the Lightning Network to wherever it needs to go, and then dollars out on that end as well. So it's using the Bitcoin infrastructure as like a, it's not technically a settlement layer of the fiat, but I guess it's like an accounting, parallel accounting system that enables you to do these fiat transactions much, much faster.
It's like Stripe with a P, but with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And stablecoins.
Graham, if you're listening out there, love the demo video. Stepping up, Graham, you're at the level where you're like the CEO doing the demo videos, the launch videos. It's cool to see. As we mentioned, BitGo, first customer there. On to the OpenSats section of the show. I'll let you take it away. We've got the 11th wave of Nostr grants and the impact report are out.
Yeah, I mean, we're running tight on time, but you can check the show notes. We've announced our new Nostr grants. And this is also our second impact report separately. We release an impact report today. What is an impact report? So historically our blog posts say these are who we've approved for grants. The impact report is what progress has been made as a result of our grants. We're going to try and do more of that. People have been asking for it. Also, like a lot of the nonprofits that we compete for charitable dollars have like very fancy impact reports that they pay shit tons of money for. But we're trying to be lean and efficient. So we don't have flashy graphics and whatnot, but instead at least we have blog posts, carefully researched blog posts that explain the significant impact that OpenSats grants have resulted in. So definitely check those out.
I'll say it's a beautiful looking blog post. You don't need to pay people, you know, the out of the box design aesthetic of your go-to content management system these days is enough. It's working.
Dude, you should see what some of these charities definitely spend more on their slides than they do on actual grants. They're beautiful.
Most
slides.
Charities are scams.
Yeah, exactly.
On the same note, building on this, Unchained has launched the Bitcoin Legacy Project, which is their initiative to give back to the community. And they're doing this in many ways. As many of you are aware, they launched the first Bitcoin Donor Advised Fund platform last year. They're expanding their efforts to give back to the community by investing in community infrastructure. So they partner with Bitcoin Park Nashville, Bitcoin Park Austin, and the space in Denver. And they're also supporting education, research, and open source development. They've donated $50,000 to Bitcoin Policy Institute, $150,000 to the University of Austin, which is catty corner from us here at Bitcoin Park Austin. They're launching a Bitcoin Scholars Program, providing up to $250,000 in research grants to influential voices producing original, impactful research on Bitcoin. And Unchained's going to match grants one-to-one made to partner organizations who support Bitcoin core development when made through Unchained's powered Bitcoin donor advisor fund, up to one Bitcoin. So great to see Unchained giving back. Always been giving back.
Love to see it.
Open source, always aligned with the open source nature of Bitcoin. They've got their website, they got this blog is high tech here. All right. On to
Boomer Marty.
Onto the Human Rights Foundation story of the week coming from South Korea, where 7-Eleven is accepting discounted CBDC payments during pilot phases. 7-Eleven, geez. South Korea launched a nationwide pilot of its central bank digital currency, enrolling 100,000 South Korean users. As part of the rollout, 7-Eleven will accept CBDC payments and offer a 10% discount on all products. Governments facing public skepticism regarding their CBDCs increasingly use similar incentive tactics to onboard users. For example, Nigeria discounts taxi fares to push its e-Naira CBDC, while Thailand is distributing its CBDC directly to citizens for free. While South Korea's CBDC project aims to modernize payments, it is part of a broader push for countries, even democratic ones, to integrate state-controlled digital currencies into everyday transactions, a move that is diametrically opposed to individuals' freedom, privacy, and human rights. Find out more about this and similar stories in the Financial Freedom Report newsletter, which goes out once a week. Go to financialfreedomreport.org and sign up. South Korea. 7-Eleven. 10%. I guess that's being subsidized, that 10% discount by the South Korean government. Another interesting reason why South Korea specifically is going to need, the government feels the need to thrust CBDCs. I think they have the worst birth rate crisis in the world. I think it's even worse than Japan. Their replacement rate is like 0.6. So in South Korea, within two generations, their population could fall by like 60% or more if they don't reverse that. And if that's a situation, yeah, it happens real quick. And you can imagine CBDCs being thrust to the market as like a way to manage that demographic imbalance that's going to materialize, where you need to take care of the older people. There's not enough younger people to do it. So you need a mechanism to airdrop money and prevent people from buying certain goods that the olds need.
I mean, this is a tactic that we see a lot, or we've seen it and we will see more of, which is that governments can afford to take loss leaders on surveillance and control products. And we saw this with El Salvador with the rollout of Chivo wallet, right? It was like, you could use any Bitcoin wallet, but if you use Chivo, then you got like $30 back. And it's because governments can do things that are not necessarily profitable. As an expense, they have deeper pockets, and as an expense to get people into a surveillance control thing. I mean, the other piece here is, I think South Korea historically has always been, you know, an authoritarian government. It's just our authoritarian government. It's like, it's weird. They don't teach you that in school, but it's like, I mean, our military dictator that we supported to fight the commies.
Yeah, they have mandatory enrollment, military enrollment. You have to do at least 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, it's more than that. I mean, their government just historically, ever since the partition, has been incredibly fucked up. And they had like this, basically they had this ruling class that we lifted up, which birthed like the Samsungs and all the major corporations over there. But here we
beware
are.
Beware, freaks. Beware. On to the software section update of the show. Bitcoin Core version 29.0 has been released. Pretty big update.
I mean, there's a bunch of things in there. I mean, the two big things is mempool RBF policy is now standard.
Standard.
So if you're just running default, you have... you accept RBF transactions replaced by fee transactions. That should be particularly helpful if mempools get busy again. And then the other piece is this ephemeral anchor thing, which seems helpful for ARC. It's a little bit above my pay grade, but it basically lets you use a dust output as an anchor. And I guess it's helpful for ARC, ARC being the layer two network.
Can't find anchor. Control F and can't find it. Been some P2P updates as
Control
well.
Control F dust.
Ephemeral dust is a new concept that allows, it's not an anchor, allows single dust output into a transaction, provided the transaction is zero fee. In order to spend any unconfirmed outputs from this transaction, the spender must also spend the dust in addition to any other desired outputs. In other words, this type of transaction should be created in a transaction package where the dust is both created and spent simultaneously.
Yeah, but it's used as an anchor party.
Insta Gibbs has been working on this. Yeah, single keyed anchor can be shared by multiple parties. So that's probably why it pertains to ARC. Interesting. test it out. You don't have to rush to upgrade. But version 29.0 has been released. Major upgrade for Bitcoin Core. Cold card firmware updates. A major one for MK4 5.42 and the Q1.32. This comes with some pretty cool new features. Cold card cosines and key teleport. Key teleport, pretty interesting.
Yes. So I looked into this at length. So key teleport is this way to set up a cold card, transfer private key secure information over air, right, remotely. You can use something like Signal or some kind of video chat like FaceTime, or I believe there's a web portal that makes it relatively easy to do. And it's encrypted with the receiving. So basically the first part is sharing a secret from the original, from the cold card you're transferring to. So it is done in a very secure way. It's done similar to how you would do a cold card clone in person, which is a cold card clone feature that already exists. But this one is set up to do remote. And so you can use it to set up, you know, in Uncle Jim scenarios, you could use it to set up your grandfather's cold card for him in a secure way, even if he's not with you, even if he's, you know, in a different state or a different country. Now, so that's a really cool feature and quite helpful and can be very useful for organizational multisigs as well. And then the other piece is basically like this co-signing service that you can think of similar to Casa or Unchained. But instead of having a server-based cosigner, you can just have someone else with a cold card being the cosigner, and then you can also set that up with spending conditions. So one spending condition is how much Bitcoin can be sent per transaction. Will it approve it or not? And then another one is velocity. So it's like how many transactions can be approved per a certain period of blocks. You could also add web two-factor. And then you can combine the two of those things to do really interesting things. You can combine the teleport and the co-signing to set up really secure multi-sig setups remotely, which I think is pretty powerful.
Shout out to CoinKite. Always innovating. Go check it out. I got an orange and a black Q. I'm collecting Qs here. Before I forget, no boost made it over 21,000 for Rabbit Hole Recap 352. Bitcoin trumps tariffs, but we did have one value for value contributor set in stone. We either streamed or boosted us 45,600 sats. So thank you, set in stone. Let's blow through the rest of these. Liana Wallet version 10.0 has been released with wallet backups and dependencies updates. It doesn't look like anything major here. And
As for boosts, I missed. People zapped us 21,000 sats. There's two more zaps here for 21,000 sats. One is from SoapMiner with no comment. And one is Figs asking, what's Matt's current recommendation for running your own node? If it's just an on-chain node, you should just run Bitcoin Core on your computer. Super easy. You can link that with Sparrow very easily. But if you want to do more than that, I really like Start9. And their full setup now is MIT open source. So you don't have to buy the hardware from them if you don't want to. Their hardware is great, though. But if you don't want to buy the hardware from them, you can just build your own computer or use an old computer and flash Start OS on it. Makes it very easy to use, very powerful, and they have some big updates coming that'll make it even better.
Yeah. Rob's saying this cold card firmware is massive. He's adding some color. Anchor outputs, or anyone can spend outputs, so it lets a third-party child pay for parent the transaction, which is pretty cool. You can have the cosigner be your own cold card with a key you never have access to, the seed phrase for. So you can do a self-sovereign cosigner and enforce things like policy limits, whitelisted addresses. Very cool.
Pretty badass.
Very badass. Last but not least, on the software update side, LMBits version 1.0.0 has been released. Long time coming. First stable
release of LNBits. Ben Ark has been working on this project for 7 years now, I believe.
Yeah, longer than since he's been alive.
Yeah.
It's true.
This is cool to see. LNBits finally has a stable release. Go check it out. Version 1.0.0. Last on the list, Ross Ulbricht joins Noster, primal.net/Ross. Go follow him.
Pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome. I was wondering how long it was going to take him to get on Noster. It was a matter of time.
Not that long.
Looks like Jack Dorsey Noster pilled him.
It seems that way, at least per his comment, right? He said, Jack told me about Noster. Here I am.
Yeah. Well, we have some time. I know Matt has to go. We have 5 minutes left. I want to give the floor to Cincy. Cincy, Zoomer's perspective on what's going on right now, what we just discussed. Is this show too boring for Zoomers?
This show is absolutely not too boring for Zoomers. Like I think I said this before we went live. I'm usually on a run right now, tuned in, and you guys are helping me get record times on my run. So the show is extremely motivating for me as a Zoomer. But we need to get more of us listening and tuned in because I'm convinced that the Zoomers are going to change the world and we need to get them involved with Bitcoin as soon as possible.
Come on, Zoomers. Come on. If not you, then who? Yeah, stop watching Aiden Ross streams and iShow Speed. They're cool. They're funny. Get into Bitcoin, okay? Get away from the OnlyFans, the TikTok houses. I'm sure it's fun. I had a lot of fun in my early 20s. You know, my form of fun was like going to bars and drinking. But it's time to get serious. There's a lot of problems in the world. We have a solution to many of those problems in Bitcoin. You have a lot of life left. I know there's nihilism out there. You think it's not worth it, but it is. You're worth it. And you should realize that. You're worth it. All you Zoomers listening out there.
We might not have all the Zoomers. But I'm pretty sure we have the best Zoomers. We need more what Zoomers?
Austrian Zoomers. We need more Austrian Zoomers. Sound money Zoomers.
Once they come into Bitcoin, do you think they start as Austrians and then they come into Bitcoin, or do you think they find Bitcoin and that's what makes them Austrians?
I think you have to get burned first. I think you have to shitcoin and get burned, and then you come to Bitcoin and become an Austrian. That was my path, at least, and that seems to be most people's paths.
I was not interested in Austrian economics before Bitcoin. It was Bitcoin and then Austrian. Yeah. I think that's the path for most young people. Anyway, what I was saying was that we have the best Zoomers, and I think I'm quite bullish. I'm quite bullish on that generation.
Yeah. Our Zoomers. This is the first in our Zoomer series. Matt has a
first
bunch of
in the Zoomer series. You got to keep it interesting, you know?
Yeah, we've had
we got to get more of them on.
Yeah, we need more Zoomers on. This is like, I love how these series naturally manifest. Last series was when we were doing emergency episodes during COVID.
The stimulus package.
Yeah, the stimulus package series.
Well, it's funny because the Zoomer series started with like one of my favorite boomer friends, or one of our favorite boomer friends, which is a way slice. Yeah, you start with the old man and then you just go straight into the Zoomer series. But the Zoomer we have next week is fantastic. I'm pretty excited about it. But Cincy, thank you for joining us and being our first Zoomer.
I really appreciate it. Yeah, hopefully I wasn't too boring for the first episode of the Zoomer series. Not a professional podcaster.
You set the bar high, Cincy. Okay, you set the bar high. You're natural. Okay, you fit right in. You added some context, some value to the show, and so we thank you for that. For being the first Zoomer on the show. We're gonna do more of these.
Blazing a trail. You can just go on RHR to all the Zoomers out there. You can just go on Rabbit Hole Recap.
And you know what else you can do? You can go stare at your BitX and manifest a mind block. Okay, let's all go do that. Enjoy your weeks, freaks. Zoomers,
love your freaks. Stay on the stack sets.
Peace and love.